This is the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening. President Trump presented a new national immigration plan this week. It would grant visas to immigrants based on merit over family connections. On the same day the White House made that announcement, South Florida leaders said the federal government announced plans to send hundreds of migrants to Broward and Palm Beach counties. Officials said they're expecting to receive up to 135 migrants a week in each county beginning in 2 weeks. Officials in both counties said they're concerned the plans put a burden on their already strapped resources. Palm Beach County Mayor Mac Bernard told WLRN this on Thursday.
We are already dealing with a homeless situation. We're trying to provide our residents in the county affordable housing, trying to create jobs for our residents, but now they're bringing their crisis at the border to Palm Beach County.
Broward County Mayor Mark Bogan told WLRN there's a lot the county has to figure out before the first migrants are set to arrive.
We don't know where they would stay. We don't know who's going to feed them, take care of them if they have health issues. Right now, we're scrambling to talk to charities. We're scrambling to talk to different organizations.
Now, the governor's office here in Florida was not informed of this decision by the federal government. The Florida governor's office said that Florida counties do not have the resources to accommodate an influx of migrants. If you live in Broward or Palm Beach County, what are your thoughts about this? What questions do you have regarding the possibility, or perhaps, frankly, at this point, the reality of 135 migrants a week coming to Broward and Palm Beach counties each beginning in 2 weeks? 800-743-WLRN. This is our telephone number. Your voice thoughts at 800-743-9576. You could send us a text as well to this number, 786-786-7636. Just please text your first name and where you're texting from. Again, the text line is 786-786-7636. We'll begin the South Florida Roundup with the Palm Beach County Mayor, Mac Bernard. Mr. Mayor, welcome to WLRN. Have you heard anything new, any more specificity from the federal government about these migrants?
Well, good afternoon. My name is Mac Bernard, Mayor for Palm Beach County. We've been in constant communication with our federal counterparts in terms of to give us the exact facts that we're going to be dealing with. So, because we're getting fluid information, and right now we've been told that within the next 2 weeks, Palm Beach County will receive 135 individuals, and they're going to be dropped off to Palm Beach County with no food, no shelter, and no resources whatsoever. Yeah. And the federal government wants to shift that burden, that responsibility to us in Palm Beach County.
Mr. Mayor, any idea if these individuals will have family in South Florida, these folks that Border Patrol will be putting on a plane and bringing to your community?
We're not sure exactly if any of these individuals have families or ties to Palm Beach County. We believe that some of them probably have said that, hey, they may have a friend that lives in Palm Beach County or Broward. However, there's nothing specific in terms of them having any ties to Palm Beach County whatsoever.
And what kind of preparations are underway on behalf of the county? Let's tackle housing to begin with.
Well, first of all, we're dealing with and we're trying to create more affordable housing in Palm Beach County. And now, with the government shifting this responsibility, we're going to have to see how we can provide housing for those individuals. We're looking at all of our public buildings right now to see how we can provide housing for, to those individuals.
Mr. Mayor, what do you mean by looking at your public buildings?
We have public buildings that we're looking in Palm Beach County. We're looking at public buildings that are just not in operation right now, and to see if we can turn them into any type of shelter situation for those individuals.
Can you give us an example?
We have an old stockade site that we have out west, so we're looking at that. And our emergency management team is meeting at 2 o'clock today, so in that way they can see all of the different options, and then for us to determine exactly for it to be brought to the board for us to decide. But we don't have much time because this is something that's going to happen within the next 2 weeks.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like you to kind of compare and contrast this to preparations for a hurricane. And I only use that comparison simply because of the time constraint that you're under. in Palm Beach County. Certainly not equating at all an influx of migrants to a natural disaster. That's not my point. My point is just the preparation that needs to take place on the part of the county.
Well, in terms of dealing with a hurricane, this is something that we plan for, you know, as soon as hurricane season ends, we start planning and gearing up for hurricane season. We do dry runs. We make sure that we work with our electrical companies just to make sure that we're prepared to take care of our residents. What we hope is that the federal government does come up with a plan on how they want to deal with this situation, but shifting that responsibility for us to plan it and then to deal with the individuals is not fair to the taxpayers of Palm Beach County.
Do you have an active dialogue right now with the Border Patrol?
Yes, our sheriff's been communicating with Border Patrol. Senator Rick Scott, Senator Rubio's office are also working in terms of getting the exact facts, getting the exact answers that are needed. So in that way, Palm Beach County will be prepared to address this situation. But this is something that we need right away.
Mayor Mac Bernard is along with us, Mayor of Palm Beach County. Mr. Mayor, hang with us here. I want to bring in our panel of reporters. Danny Rivero is covering this for us here at WLRN. Madeline Fox doing the same. She's our Palm Beach County reporter. Madeline with us via Skype. And Monique Madden is an immigration reporter at our partner, the Miami Herald. All three with us here on the South Florida Roundup. You can join the conversation, 800-743-9576. Again, the voice line, 800-743-9576. Or text us at 786-786-7636. Let us know your first name, where you're texting from at 786-786-7636. Maddie, let me begin with you in Palm Beach County. As you hear the comments today from the mayor, what are some of the kind of the big questions that still remain that need to be answered in this relatively short time frame with the mayor, but also other elected officials there and the sheriff?
Well, the thing that strikes me the most is, as the mayor had said, we really don't know a lot about the people coming in. I mean, are they going to need, you know, school is out right now, but are they going to need schooling? Are we talking about school-aged kids? Are they going to need housing, or do they have family or friends here, so that might not be an issue? So really, until we know more about the people coming here, it's hard to, and it sounds like the mayor is expressing this, it's really hard to know what kind of resources need to be put in place, let alone where to put them and how to do that.
Danny, why so much confusion, seemingly, in this instance, or lack of information sharing in the part of what we're hearing from the mayor and the sheriff, local officials, in terms of what they would like to hear from some of the federal authorities here?
That's a good question. And I'll mention, I mean, I called the CBP last night. I talked to one of the heads of communication. I talked to someone again this morning. They said they don't have anything to share with us. Governor DeSantis did actually hold a press conference earlier about it was a bill signing, but he addressed this at some point. And he said, you know, this is not coming from the White House. Yeah. This is something that's coming from the agencies. We're not in agreement with it. It's something that's going to have to be discussed. But there is very limited communication. Even members of Congress, our two senators, have not received information that I'm aware of. They've publicly stated that they have a lot of unanswered questions about this. Who are these people? Where are they coming from? Do they have connections here? There's just a lot of open questions at this point.
Well, one of the open questions, Monique Madden with the Miami Herald, is that Miami-Dade County is not explicitly involved in this, a county that is primarily foreign-born. A county that has kind of certainly found itself in the forefront of previous immigration debates. What do we know? What can we infer in the fact that Dade County is not explicitly involved in this?
I'm not too sure, and I think everyone is asking that question. Out of all the counties, why not Miami-Dade? I've been in contact with Mayor Jimenez's office which has told me that they're in contact with Palm Beach County and Broward County to see how they can help in any way and if they could help relieve those two counties. So right now, that's where they're at, and that's what they're saying.
800-743-9576 is the voice line. The text line also open at 786-786-7636. We've got a texter from 786 asking, will the migrants be allowed to work? Mayor Mac Bernard with Palm Beach County, can you answer that question? Do you know of the kind of regulations that the migrants will have to be living under if and when they come to Palm Beach County?
Well, all we've been told is that we're not sure. I don't think they would be allowed to work because they would still be asylum seekers who have not received a hearing. So I'm thinking that most likely these individuals are coming to Palm Beach County and dropped off, and there's nothing else.
Just to add to what the mayor said, when we say we don't know who these people are, I mean, there are specificities that we are not aware of. Did these people cross in between border checkpoints and they crossed illegally? Did they apply legally for asylum at a checkpoint and they were legally let into the country and now they're being paroled while they await a court hearing? We don't know. We just don't know. There's been no communication on that. But those are relevant questions for exactly things like this.
All of this, of course, happening in the foreground of what now is in the background, which is the Florida legislature's effort to ban so-called sanctuary cities, of which there are exactly zero in Florida. But the lawmakers taking that stand in this last legislative session. Monique Madden with the Miami Herald. Do we know of any connection, direct or indirect, potentially between that kind of state debate around sanctuary cities and this decision by Customs Protection and Border Patrol?
I think some people are viewing it as punishment. As you know, Mayor Jimenez took
Carlos Jimenez from Miami-Dade County.
Yes, he took a stance to say that our county won't allow that. So I think he was praised by President Trump back then, and I think the other counties. Well, other people are saying that they're thinking that the counties are being punished for not taking the same stance that Mayor Jimenez took.
Mayor Bernard, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, first of all, we're not a sanctuary county. And also, you know, our sheriff's been very cooperative working with the federal government in terms of addressing immigration issues in the county. But what's really important is the fact that, you know, Palm Beach County taxpayers shouldn't be punished for an issue that is a border issue that they're shifting the responsibility to Palm Beach County with no resources. It's not fair to the taxpayers, and this is totally outrageous.
So would you be in support of this kind of effort if it were to come with federal aid, Mayor?
We would have to take it to the board, and the board will decide that. But we would definitely look at it and make a decision on it. But we've been, we're not a sanctuary city, and Broward is not also. But that doesn't mean that we should be burdened with a federal responsibility without planning. And planning is important because, you know, if we know who's coming and how to plan for it, then Palm Beach County will adjust and we will just deal with it. But that's the reason why planning is really key.
Just to add a little context to what the mayor is alluding to, I mean, there's a lot of confusion about what's happening and there's a lot of cynicism. People are saying perhaps this is political retribution mm-hmm. of some kind or whatnot. Palm Beach and Broward counties, President Trump knows those counties. During the recount for the 2018 election just a couple months ago, he accused both the counties of election fraud. Our Governor Ron DeSantis has suspended officials from both those counties.
Mm-hmm. Election supervisor in Palm Beach County and the sheriff in Broward County.
Absolutely. And the election supervisor in Broward County
as well. That's right.
Exactly. So the cynicism that we're seeing now has been preconditioned in this context. And the Trump administration last month acknowledged that they were thinking about sending some of these migrants to sanctuary cities as a kind of retribution.
Yeah, yeah. Mr. Mayor, our Palm Beach reporter, Madeline Fox, is along with us, and she's got a question for you. Maddie?
Okay.
Thanks. So you've talked a little bit about mobilizing county agencies and other players to kind of figure out next steps as much as you possibly can with the information you have. Can you tell us a little bit more about what stakeholders and what groups are getting involved at this point?
Well, first of all, our sheriff, Rick Bradshaw, is very involved, and also with all of the police association in Palm Beach County. So the public safety awareness is key. Our emergency management, comprehensive emergency management plan team is meeting today at 2 o'clock. So in that way, they can activate all of the different agencies that would be needed to address this situation. You know, from an emergency management perspective, you know, because we're pretty much gearing up for hurricane season. And so that changes exactly how do we deal with individuals and if we deal, and if we have a hurricane that's in Palm Beach County. So DCF, we've communicated with DCF in terms of, you know, what type of resources we're going to need from DCF, and also with our school district, because we don't know if we're getting kids or if we're getting families, and how do we keep those families together. And so there's so many unanswered questions, but we are meeting at 2 o'clock, so in that way we can start activating the plan.
We've got a bit of a criticism here on the text line from a 954 listener. They write, perfect example of not in my backyard. The text continues, last time I checked, Florida was part of a nation, and immigration is a national problem. People want to weigh in and show support for unregulated immigration as long as it doesn't affect them. Now it does. Step up, or I'll edit this and or be quiet. Mr. Mayor, I think this gets to your point about uncompensated migrants, the lack of federal funding coming with these migrants that are being brought into Palm Beach County, a county which, of course, does not have an international land border, but now is part of this this border, direct border debate. How do you respond to that kind of criticism?
Well, first of all, we're not saying that we don't have an immigration problem, that our immigration system is broken. So we're saying that the federal government needs to address that. And so, and then while they're addressing that, and if there's a, and if they're going to make the decision that they're going to shift those individuals from the border to different areas of the country, then they need to have a plan. And so everything that we do in Palm Beach County is in regards to a plan. We're dealing with a homeless population in Palm Beach County. We deal with hurricanes in Palm Beach County. We're trying to create housing. And additionally, we have a hepatitis A situation that's taking place in the county. So we plan for all these things. And what we're asking is that, where's the plan? And so in that way, we can execute the plan.
Do you have any sense of what the education obligations are going to be on the county? I realize you're the mayor of the county, not with the schools in Palm Beach County, Mr. Mayor. But is that part of the discussion?
Well, that's part of the discussion in terms of, are there kids who are coming and what age and what schools and how do we plan for our next school year? And do we have the funds and the resources for our school system? And also, if there are families. And do we keep those families together? And how do we address those situations? So it's just so much that we have to. Yeah. There's so many unknowns, as was said before.
Danny and Monique, Mr. Mayor, I know that you've got to talk to some national media as well, so I'll let you go at this point. Mayor Mac Bernard with us, Mayor of Palm Beach County. We appreciate your thoughts, Mr. Mayor. Thanks for joining us on the South Florida Roundup. Danny Rivera with WLRN still with us. Monique Madden with our partner, the Miami Herald, covering immigration. What role is this playing? Fit this into the kind of the broader reality of immigration along the southern border and the pressures that are happening in these border communities in Texas, Arizona, California, and those areas. I realize you're not covering those areas, but we've seen a lot of national reports about how it is straining systems, charities, and local governments in those areas. Is this a relief valve that now Florida, South Florida, has found itself really in the crosshairs, Danny?
To answer that question, I mean, yesterday, Sheriff Rick Bradshaw, the Palm Beach County Sheriff, he said something that was of note. He said, we think that the majority of the people that are going to be coming here are coming from the El Paso area. We know that because of reporting that's been done by many people, NPR, I've done reporting on it as well, El Paso has become the epicenter of Cuban migration across the border. Now that wet foot, dry foot is not in place for Cubans. They are actually building up on the Ciudad Juarez side of the border. an official said, told Reuters last month that there's about 75% of the thousands of people seeking asylum on the Mexican side are Cubans.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't be very surprising if some of them have family connections here in South Florida.
Monique, how about from your perspective, South Florida finding itself now smack dab in part of this this land border immigration migration debate?
It's interesting. I've received mixed reviews. I've received many emails saying, hey, what's new? That's the life of Miami. That's Miami-Dade County. That's nothing new. We get immigrants all the time from all different places. So is it a relief valve? I think it can be, but I think Miami-Dade County isn't too shocked if the news would have come to our county. Now, West Palm and Palm Beach, I don't cover those counties. Mm-hmm. I'm not knowledgeable on those areas. However, I have received emails and phone calls saying, yeah, this is nothing new, cover something else, which is interesting to me.
Yeah. There's always those voices out there. Thankfully, we've got one of those voices that does know Broward County really well. Along with us, our Broward County correspondent, Katie Swietalski, now joins us via FaceTime. Katie, how about the Broward perspective? What kind of preparations are underway? Any more information that Broward County may have to be able to share about what to expect?
So I'm actually in the mayor's office right now. That's why it's a little noisy. But one of the things that I was just talking to the mayor about is exactly what you were asking the Palm Beach County mayor about, this concern over education and medical supplies. And Broward knows right now is that the first and it's expected to be majority family. They don't know ages. They don't know anything other than that, but that families will be coming together. And so it's interesting because the main concern is sort of corroborating seed. Does Broward County have any grounds to sue the federal government over this? It doesn't look like that's the case, but that's still in the really early stages.
Your FaceTime connection's going in and out there, Katie. We're going to have you try to join you on the telephone if we can. Let our producers know that. Just because that connection's a little bit weak there. Is there much legal standing? Is there a precedent at all? Do you know? I mean, have you heard this Danny Rivero, this thought of somehow these local governments suing the federal government for the disbursement of migrants?
That's a good question. I mean, I'm sure some people would call that an unfunded mandate of some kind, which a lot of people are very strongly against. Local communities, local governments face a lot of strains on a day-to-day basis. Adding another layer on that, kind of brought in by the federal government, is certainly a cause of concern.
Yeah. As we get a hold of Katie Swietalski again, our Broward County reporter, who's in the mayor's office in Broward County, we're going to get on the phone with her. Let's take a phone call from Fort Lauderdale. Andy is on line one. Go ahead, Andy. You're on the radio.
Yes, I was just wondering, does anyone know if there's many, many other cities across the United States that are going to start receiving these shipments or whatever of immigrants? There are 500 a month going to Phoenix and to other cities. What's the deal with that?
Got it, Andy. Thanks. Danny, Monique, have you seen or heard of other communities that have gotten these same similar notices that South Florida received on Thursday this week?
I have not, but the sheriff's office have the same question. So that's a pending question with HHS, with DHS, with CBP, and they have not gotten back to me.
We do know that the AP has reported that the CBP, Custom Border Patrol, is preparing to start releasing some migrants to the public, like at bus shelters, et cetera, across the country.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know of specific areas that have been targeted for releasing people in these situations, but it's certainly something that we've been kind of expecting at some point.
WLRN's Broward County reporter Katie Swietalski back with us on the telephone. Katie, we lost the connection there when you're talking about some of the preparations. The questions that Broward County officials are asking, same questions that Palm Beach County officials certainly are asking. What about the status of preparations? What are they doing? What are they talking about in terms of housing, health care, food, education?
I'm glad you asked. Basically, one of the points that Broward is most concerned about right now is our homeless shelters are all full. There is not a facility to start putting these people in or helping get a roof over their head. And Broward's stance is, look, you know, we are welcoming, we want to help as much as we can, but we need finances and resources to be able to do that. And so I think Broward's biggest concern right now, especially coming out of the mayor's office, is homeless encampments. Fort Lauderdale recently just got rid of a homeless tent encampment in downtown, not through building a new daytime homeless shelter, which was floated, but through a public-private partnership with, you know, private capital and some big charities here like United Way. One of the things looking forward, preparation is at the Broward County Commission meeting on Tuesday, commissioners are going to start talking about a plan. I mean, their plan right now is to make a plan. And we are, it seems like we are a little bit behind Palm Beach County in this regard, because Palm Beach County Sheriff is being very outspoken about this. They're sort of leading the charge of where the information is coming from. But in Broward, our Sheriff Gregory Tony, was up front in a statement yesterday that he heard this through the Palm Beach County Sheriff, and he doesn't want to be involved.
Katie, do you know if there's active conversations directly between Broward County and Border Patrol? Like the Palm Beach mayor confirmed that there were conversations between Palm Beach County and Border Patrol. What about Broward County? Is there a line of communications there? No.
Their line of communication came from the sheriff in Palm Beach County, not directly from Border Control.
Katie Swatowski covering Broward County at the mayor's office now as we speak, discussing plans that were made public on Thursday of this week of the federal government Border Patrol bringing up to 135 migrants a week, flying them to Broward and Palm Beach County beginning in 2 weeks. Katie, thanks for sharing your reporting. Madeline Fox along with us earlier, WLRN's Palm Beach reporter, Danny Rivero, covering any number of issues here with us at WLRN. Thanks so much, Danny.
Thanks, guys.
Monique, you stick with us. Monique Madden, immigration reporter with our partner, the Miami Herald. We got lots more to talk about, Monique, including protests continuing outside a migrant detention center that can house thousands of children in Homestead. That's next as the roundup continues. Welcome back to the South Florida Roundup here on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening. Protests continue outside the Homestead Child Detention Center for migrants. Earlier this week, three South Florida congresswomen, Donna Shalala, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, and Debbie Mercosal Powell, called for an investigation into a $1 million no-bid government contract awarded to the company that runs the Homestead Center. Lawmakers want the Department of Health and Human Services Inspector General to look into how the contract was awarded. They want to know if General John Kelly, President Trump's former chief of staff, had any role in awarding the contract. He joined the advisory board of the operator's parent company. So continuing a conversation, broad conversation about immigration in South Florida, this with the Homestead Child Migration Detention Center, 800-743-WLRN. Have you been out to protest? Are you in support of this detention center? 800-743-9576. Perhaps you have driven past this or know folks who live or work in the area. You can send us a text, 786-786-7636. Text your first name where you're texting from to 786-786-7636. The Miami Herald's immigration reporter, Monique Madden, still with us from our newsroom inside the Miami Herald in Doral. Monique, tell us a little bit more about the congresswoman's position here. What kind of investigation are they after, and how likely are they to get it?
So this came to a surprise to many people, the fact that this operator got a no-bid contract, especially for such a big amount. So I think they're looking into an investigation, and if you read their letter to the Inspector General's office, you'll see that they want to know what role did John Kelly play in the negotiations, if any. I think it's a huge question, considering that we had spotted John Kelly on a golf cart at the Homestead Center just in early April, and that's when the contract was awarded. So if you put the timeline together, I think there are valid questions here, and they want them answered, and so do we here at the Herald, and we ourselves have put in the same requests.
So walk us backward here a little bit in terms of the contract, beginning with the company. It's a private enterprise. It's a subsidiary of a publicly traded company that actually runs this detention center on behalf of the federal government, correct?
So it's run by Comprehensive Health Services, which is under Caliburn, which is under DC Capital Partners. DC Capital tried to go public, but then backed out of that initial public offering. So it's not a publicly traded company. It was trying to be. What's interesting about it is that John Kelly joined the board of Caliburn. Caliburn was formed right when the shelter was reopened here in February of this year. So it's a fairly new company. Mm-hmm. What happened here is that the Department of Health and Human Services has to determine how these kids are going to be best taken care of. And in order to do that, they need to select a company. And they picked Caliburn's company, which is CHS. It's all very confusing. If you read the article, it kind of outlines that.
Yeah, no, the corporate structure here is a bit of a labyrinth, certainly. But what about this contract that was awarded, this no-bid contract that the congresswoman would like to be investigated? What do we know about it?
I'm going to take you back in order to answer your question. There was first a few other contracts that went before this no-bid contract, and that's important to note. At first, there was a $50 million contract that was about for a four-month period. Then came a nine-month contract, which was for $222 million, and there was competition for those two contracts, and CHS got them, but there was competition. But this last one was noticed when I saw that the prior one was about to expire. So I called up the federal officials and said, hey, what's the status of this contract? So they prolonged us. Turns out they were negotiating this deal, but it was a no-bid contract, meaning there was no competition, which is very, very rare in the government contracting world. Mm-hmm. The Department of Health and Human Services cited that it was because of urgent and compelling circumstances, and they deemed it an emergency because of what's happening at the border. The influx is just way too big. They have nowhere to put these children.
So describe to us again about who is inside the detention center. Who are these children? Where are they coming from? What do we know about them?
What we know is that they're teenagers. So mm-hmm. they're anywhere from 13 to 17 years old. And these kids are considered unaccompanied minors. What that means is that they crossed the border without a biological mother or father. That doesn't mean they didn't come with a legal guardian. That doesn't mean that they didn't come with a family member or a sibling. They just did not come with their biological mom and dad, which is a point of controversy. The administration says that there is no more family separation, but people would argue that, you know, separating a child from their aunt or their uncle is family separation. So those kids could have been separated from a family member or could have crossed alone.
And this new contract, I believe, can expand this center up to, what, 3,200 person capacity?
Or more, yes.
Or more. What do we know of the status of that?
The last time I checked, we were at, I believe, 2,500, okay. And that was a few weeks ago. But it continues to increase. Just the other day, there was 300 kids that were bussed in.
And what happens when a teenager turns 18 inside this facility?
They're placed in handcuffs and taken to a detention center because they're adults. They're no longer children. So they're taken most probably to the Broward Transitional Center.
And tell us about the protesting that has picked up in its pace. There was a Mother's Day protest this past Sunday on Mother's Day outside, and a call by a number of charity advocacy organizations to have constant protesting outside the detention center.
Absolutely. There are several advocates and protesters that sleep there. They're afraid that their space is going to be taken away. There have been ladders that have been chained to nearby guardrails so that they won't move the ladders to see the children with their binoculars. Some of the signs have disappeared. HHS has taken over a lot of that land for employee parking, and that's currently a battle right now. They don't have a place to go, so some of them are sleeping there.
Are they on public land?
It is public, but it's still unclear, and I'm in the reporting stages of figuring out what's the deal with the land and who has a right to it? Is it the employee parking? Because the truth is that the place is expanding and there's nowhere to park, and employees need a place to park is what they're telling me.
You know, talking about the real estate, about where these protesters are, it's important because it can be a constitutional question here. Are there barriers to get onto this space that the protesters have used?
As far as barriers, the roads are open, but as far as you can't be on the street because there's constant security and police there telling you you can't be in the street, obviously. But there's, you know, strips of land. There's what you would call a swale, and they have the right to stand there. But if employees are parking there, then where can they stand if they can't stand on the street? And that's been the biggest issue. And these groups have increased over time. They started off with about three or four people. Now people have been flying in from all places across the United States just to say that they slept in front of Homestead.
Hmm. I know the focus has been on the protesters. You've been out there. Have there been many supporters showing up? Any counter protesters, so to speak?
To be honest, I have not seen many. There have been a few, but I have not seen many.
And then finally, the congresswomen here, particularly Donna Shalala, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, and Debbie Mercosul Powell, they've taken leadership positions here. They have shown up at the Homestead Childhood Migrant Detention Facility, asking to be let in. They have been denied that permission. Do they plan on any kind of tour in the future? What are you hearing from their offices and their engagement with the property itself?
That's interesting. They at least Debbie Mercosul Powell has gone by and attempted to go in again and again, and she's been denied access. That hasn't been widely reported, but it has happened again. And I think they're working on some sort of legislation to continue fighting that. I mean, they feel that they are allowed to go in, but how are they going to get past someone with a gun? You know, it's just they can't just walk in.
Monique Madden covering immigration for our partner, the Miami Herald, with us from our studios inside the Miami Herald in Doral. Monique, thanks for sharing all your reporting with us here on the Roundup.
Absolutely.
We always appreciate it. Great to have you.
Thanks.
Lots more to come on the program. Stick with us. President Trump said he supports more funding for Everglades restoration, tripling his original budget request, more than tripling, after he'd cut funding in his original 2020 budget proposal. Fixing the Everglades and the fate of local straw bans in Florida. All that's next as we talk about the environment on the Florida Roundup. We're back on the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening. President Trump announced earlier this week that he is supporting more funding for Everglades restoration. The president said he'd back a $200 million push to fund restoration projects like a reservoir south of Lake Okeechobee. The reservoir would reduce polluted runoff in an effort to prevent algae blooms to the east and west coasts, as well as reduce, potentially, the naturally occurring red tide. Now, in March, President Trump proposed cutting spending by the Army Corps of Engineers by 31%. He also failed to include any money for an Everglades reservoir. Bit of about-face in the past week here on the part of the White House as it relates to fixing the Everglades. WLRN's environmental reporter Jenny Stiletovich is with us back on the Florida Roundup. So how significant is this change? More than triple of what he originally proposed spending, right?
Right. And this makes Congress's job substantially easier to get this money to the Everglades, coming up from a $63 million budget for the Corps to $200 million is significant.
And in a relatively short period of time, right? I mean, this is, 6 weeks or so, maybe a couple of months after the president first announced a pretty sizable cut to the spending to now tripling his original proposal.
Right. And that caught everyone off guard because, if you recall, when he campaigned, he promised to help restore the Everglades. He gave a speech in Collier County in 2016 in which he praised our beautiful Everglades and said he was there to fix it. And at the time, everybody thought, the Everglades can be viewed as an infrastructure project. It fits sort of in his plan. And so they were hopeful at the time that when he said that he was going to fix it, that he would stick by his promise, because it can be considered infrastructure. So in March, when the budget was unveiled and it was only $63 million for restoration work, everybody was kind of surprised. I asked around about that, and there was some concern that there was some confusion that...
It's a polite way to put it, I think. Ready?
Right.
Lois Frankel, a Democratic member of Congress who sits on the Water Infrastructure Subcommittee of the Budget Committee in the House, called the president's proposal a non-starter way back when. But is this a win for the South Florida delegation? I mean, have they been successful in kind of negotiating this with the White House?
Right. And this was a bipartisan effort. Just this week, Lois Frankel said during a subcommittee hearing, repeated that this was a bipartisan effort, that everybody from Florida agreed on this.
Mario Desvillard, also part of the subcommittee as well. Wasserman Schultz as well. So South Florida very well represented here. And some of those have the ear of the president.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So where does the money go?
Well, so that's a good question, because the reservoir work is still a little bit off in the future. The Corps said this week during a meeting of the National Academies of Sciences that they did not plan on having it done until 2027. There are still significant design.
Let me pause you right there for a second. Didn't have plans for the Everglades restoration to be completed by 2027?
No. The reservoir, the gotcha. Everglades reservoir. Okay. Is not due until 2027 because there's still a lot of design work to be done. Mm-hmm. If you'll recall, when the plan was submitted by the Water Management District, the Corps responded with an 180-page critique of this design. And so, in fact, when the budget request was made by the Corps this year, they put together their budget 2 years in advance.
Yeah.
So they didn't even ask for Everglades Reservoir money. This cycle, because they're 2 years out. So
anybody who's worked with the Corps knows they're careful. They check their figures left and right. These are engineers first, regulators and policy wonks second, politicians maybe third. Right, Jenny, you've talked to a lot of these folks, but when they see this volatility in the funding proposals, does that give them pause? In other words, right, because they want to make plans. 1-2 years out, and they're looking for multiple, you know, in some cases half decades or even decades out. But when they see a budget go from X to 3X over the course of 5, 6, 8 weeks or so with negotiation, does that affect at all kind of, I don't know, how these projects wind up getting rolled out?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's part of the reason why Everglades, the comprehensive Everglades plan is 20 years old, and of the 68 projects, none are fully completed.
Yeah. And so this Reservoir South, important, remind us why and the role of the state in this reservoir.
So the state pushed this reservoir through. This had been further down the list. It was always part of the plan, but it wasn't going to come along until much later. Because of the terrible algae blooms on both coasts, the state said, we've got to get this done. So lawmakers in 2016 approved it. But they sort of... They hemmed in the plan. I mean, they said, okay, we'll give you a reservoir, but the reservoir has to be built on state-owned land. Water Management District, we're not going to let you seize any additional land to make it the size as it was originally envisioned, which was 60,000 acres. Mm-hmm. Now it's just 17,000 acres. It will be 23 feet deep, and there's some water quality issues associated with that.
Talking about the environment this week and fixing the Everglades, big changes from President Trump and his proposed spending for the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, responsible for managing the lake level in Lake Okeechobee and also trying to fix the plumbing of the Everglades. 800-743-9576. Your questions, your comments about this at 800-743-9576. You could also send us a text. Let us know your first name, where you're texting from, to this number, 786-786-7636. The text line is also open at 786-786-7636. Speaking with WLRN's environmental reporter, Jenny Stiletovich, what about the environmental side of what the president announced this week? Are South Florida environmental groups satisfied with this this tripling of the budget for fixing the Everglades?
Yeah. Yeah, I think you could say they're happy about the money, because last year the Everglades only got about $114 million. This is a big boost. I think what they remain unhappy about are some of the other policies that the president has about the environment.
Not necessarily directly related to the Everglades, though.
Right, yeah. Right. But climate issues, yeah. Climate change issues.
Fossil fuel.
Drilling, yeah.
Drilling, emission standards, all those kinds of things. Now, how does this play in then to the state role? Governor DeSantis just completed that first legislative session. Environment is a cornerstone for his election win, was a cornerstone for his first legislative budget as well. And so kind of fold in all of this together in terms of state spending priorities and now this what looks like to be additional money coming in from the federal government.
Right. So the whole Everglades restoration is supposed to be a 50-50 cost share between the state and the feds. And the state has moved ahead, is well ahead of federal funding. So the federal spending. So this catches the feds up to the state level. However, with the new governor assigning $360 million this year, it puts the state back ahead if that money gets spent.
So. And the state or the reality possibility of algal blooms this summertime?
Well, the last report from the Water Management District was that there was only a moderate threat on the western edge of the lake, which leads into the Caloosahatchee. But we are in for a, you know, rainy, hot summer, and conditions are usually good for algae.
Certainly, if the last week is any indication of what's ahead of us, it's been rainy and hot all throughout South Florida. Right. I do want to finally ask you about Governor DeSantis' first veto in terms of a legislative bill. Had somewhat to do with the environment. It was deciding that state lawmakers should not ban straw bans at local levels.
That's right. I think this is probably an easy get for him, though, just to ban a ban on straws.
But what was interesting here is like local control, local decisions, right, versus kind of state decisions. And this, it may be the straw ban this time around, but it certainly does play right into the environmental credibility that the governor has been stoking and looking to increase his credibility.
That's true. However, this morning he did sign a controversial toll road bill that
which goes up north, right? We haven't heard much about that here in South Florida because there's plenty of roads already. Well, some would argue maybe not enough or in the right places, but this is a enormous build out of roads north of Tampa and Orlando and kind of through the Big Bend area.
Yes, it would put major new highways through areas that have not had such big roads like this.
Certainly something to watch for us as we move forward. But Jenny Stiletovich, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Counting the numbers and good news on the birds this week as well that we saw, the migrant birds, yeah. Jenny Stiletovich watching the environment for us here at WLRN. Don't forget, you can always join us on social media. Our Facebook is open wide. And, of course, send us a tweet at WLRN on Twitter. Again, it is at WLRN.
Finally on the roundup, it is cap and gown season. From preschool to graduate school, families and friends are celebrating graduation. We ask you for your commencement comments for South Florida's new graduates. Kathy Diaz in Fort Lauderdale starts us off.
I would tell the new graduates to cherish these years that they are in right now. I would tell them to make good choices, to practice balance in their lives, to keep healthy, to keep exercising, and to stay in school until they are certain they can make it on their own.
Hello, guys. My name is Andres Lozano. I just graduated from FIU. I got my bachelor's degree in finance and just want to share some advice with you. Save yourself and your parents money. Bring your own food, bring water. You don't need to go around and be spending your money on sodas and burgers. Save yourself money.
Put down your smartphone, please. Pay attention to what's going on in your real world in real time. It's a lot more exciting and it's a lot more tangible than watching a 2x6-inch screen all the time that's filled with other people's lives. Live your own life and do it with purpose. My name is Sue McDonald and I'm a writer who lives in Coconut Grove.
This is Laura Sue Walansky, also known to many as the Silver Nightingale, and I live in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Figure out what you really care about and do that. Commit to that. Do it for a living if you can, or do it as a volunteer. It doesn't matter. Either way, it will give your life meaning and deep fulfillment.
My name is Leonie Hermanton, and I'm the Director of Development and Communications at Santla Haitian Neighborhood Center. This is my message to new graduates. We are living in difficult times, times where the other is demonized. Here in South Florida, the other is us, We live in America's ground zero, the space where the descendants of enslaved Africans, the immigrants, the refugees, the queers, have built a thriving, exciting, and diverse community. As graduates, whatever path you take, you must commit to making of Miami a model, the model of an empathetic, inclusive, tolerant, and humane environment created and sustained by the other. This is the best model for the America we dream of.
You can add your voice as a commencement speaker of sorts by texting the word GRAD, G-R-A-D, to 786-786-7636. And congratulations to all the graduates and their families. The South Florida Roundup is produced by Alexander Gonzalez. Our engagement producer is Katie Lepre. Tracer Frontado is our digital director. News director Terrence Shepard. Alicia Zuckerman, our editorial director. Director of Radio Operations, Peter J. Mertz. Director of Radio Programming and Technical Supervisor, Jason Savka. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for calling, texting, listening, and supporting public radio.